Chapter 22. The morning brings a foyer filled with cases and trunks, girls going home for Easter week. They stand hugging goodbye, as if they shall see each other never again, rather than Friday next. I have come down in my most sensible travelling dress, a brown tweed that will not show the train smudges and soot. Anne has donned her drab travelling suit. Felicity, of course, will not be outdone. She wears a beautiful moiré silk dress in the perfect colour of blue to complement her eyes. I shall look like a field mouse beside her. The carriages that will take us to the train station are brought round. Groups of girls are paired with their chaperones. Spirits are high, but the true excitement is happening between Mrs. Nightwing and Mr. Miller.
"One of our men went missing last night,"
Mr. Miller says.
"Young Tambly."
"Mr. Miller, how is it that I may keep watch over scores of schoolgirls, yet you cannot keep watch over grown men?"
Bridget looks up from the back of a carriage, where she's instructing the footman on exactly how to secure our cases, much to his annoyance.
"Whiskey! Devil whiskey!"
she offers, with a firm nod. Mrs. Nightwing gives a sigh.
"Bridget, if you please."
Mr. Miller shakes his head fervently.
"It weren't whiskey, mum. Tambly was on watch in the woods and up by the old graveyard, where we'd heard noises. Now he's gone."
He hisses through gritted teeth.
"It's them gypsies, I tell you."
"And the reason you were behind on the East Wing was the rain, as I recall. There is always some blame, some excuse,"
Mrs. Nightwing sniffs.
"I'm sure your Mr. Tambly will show up. He is young, as you said, and the young tend to be rebellious."
"You might be right, mum, but it ain't like Tambly not to show."
"Have faith, Mr. Miller. I'm sure he'll return."
Felicity and I embrace Anne. We're both to go to London, whilst Anne will spend the holiday with her horrid cousins in the country.
"Don't let those ghastly brats get the better of you," I tell Anne.
"It will be the longest week of my life," she says with a sigh.
"Mother will insist on paying calls so that we might ingratiate ourselves," Felicity says. "I'll be on display like some hideous china doll."
I look about, but Miss McCleavy is nowhere to be seen. "Here," I say, taking their hands, "a bit of courage to see you through." Soon we all have magic running under our skin. It brings a glow to our eyes, a flush to our cheeks. A crow flies past, and with a loud cry settles on the turret, where one of Miller's men shoos it away. I'm reminded of the bird I saw the other night that vanished. Or did it? It was late, I tell myself, and dark, and the two make for unreliable impressions. And anyway, with the magic running high, I feel lovely just now, too lovely to worry. Our carriage clippity-clops down the drive behind the others. I look back at Spence, at the men on the scaffolding mortaring stones into place, Mrs. Nightwing standing like a sentry at the front doors, Bridget helping girls on their way, the thick carpet of grass and the bright yellow of daffodils. The only threat is a band of rain clouds moving in. They puff out their cheeks and blow, sending shrieking girls after their hats. I laugh. The magic has me in its warm embrace, and I feel that no harm shall come to me. Even the dark clouds pressing against the silent gargoyles can't catch us. Without warning, my blood gallops hard inside my veins till it is all I can hear. Thrum, 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 thrum. Outside, the world's merry-go-round gathers speed too. Storm clouds slither and stretch, dancing in the sky. I blink. The sound of a cannon in my ears. The crow is in flight. Blink. It settles on the gargoyle's head. Blink. Sharp as a whip, the gargoyle's head twists round. My breath catches, and in that instant, the gargoyle's sharp teeth come down. My head feels light. My eyelids flutter, as frantic as the crow's wings.
"Gemma!"
Felicity's voice carries as if underwater, and then it's clear as day.
"Gemma, what is the matter?"
My blood settles into its normal cadence. Felicity's wide-eyed.
"Gemma, you fainted."
"The gargoyle," I say, trembling. "It came alive." The two other girls in the carriage regard me cautiously. The four of us crane our necks out the windows and peer up at the school's roof. It's quiet and still, nothing but stone. A fat raindrop hits me squarely in the eye. "Ow!" I say, sitting back. I wipe the rain from my face. It seemed so real. Did I really faint? Felicity nods. Worry creases her forehead.
"Gemma," she whispers, "the gargoyles are made of stone. Whatever you saw was some hallucination. There's nothing there, I promise you. Nothing.
Nothing, I echo. I chance a last look behind us, and it's an ordinary spring day before Easter, a patch of rain moving in from the east. Did I really see those things, or did I only think so? Is this a new trick of the magic? My fingers shake in my lap. Without a word, Felicity places her hands over mine, silencing my fear.